This is Thoughts on the Table by DisgracesOnTheMenu.com.
Hello and welcome back to Thoughts on the Table, the audio blog on food and food culture with Paolo, your host, and with Nick Zingale back again. Hi, Nick.
Ciao, Paolo.
Fantastic to have you back. So last time we spoke, it was in July, I believe, and you were telling us about your incredible trip to southern Italy, where you discovered your native towns, where your parents came from. So that was very meaningful and very interesting for me. To end the year, I thought we would get together again and have a special episode dedicated to Christmas traditions. So thanks for coming back to talk about that. That's awesome.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Fantastic. Yeah, I thought, you know, I really want to hear what Nick has to tell us because, you know, there are so many similarities between myself and Nick, but also so many differences because, of course, he's from an Italian-American family from southern Italy and I'm from an Italian family from the north. So lots of differences there. So for you, when does Christmas start? Is it something that starts Christmas Eve or Christmas Day?
Well, you know, when I was a kid, it would really start very shortly after Thanksgiving.
Oh, I see.
The end of November, it would start. That was when the decorations would come out.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the tree would go up. We would always do a real tree. Now, are Christmas trees big in Italy, Paolo? Are they? I know they're a German thing originally. I don't know if that's more of an American habit.
No, they're big there too, at least in northern Italy, but mm-hmm. The tradition there is, of course, the presepe, which is the nativity scene. So that's okay. the more Catholic thing to do. Mm-hmm. But some people do both. Actually, it's kind of funny because a lot of people put their nativity scene underneath the Christmas tree, which is kind of funny. But that's something that you see. In my family, we did one, the other, or both, depending. We were not very, very structured there. But certainly we had the tree. Not real trees. I think Italy doesn't have so many trees. So, yeah, those are probably very expensive and hard to come around. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we would do the real tree, go out, you know, tree farms, bring it home.
Yeah.
All that, obviously. But yeah, so Christmas started very early. And when I was a kid, it was just always this long buildup of anticipation.
Mm-hmm.
But then, to more directly answer your question, Christmas Eve is where the real festivities started.
Mm-hmm.
And I had several sides of my family that we celebrated Christmas with, not just two, but really three,
mm-hmm.
Two different sides of my mom's family. But one of the sides of my mom's family, we would go and do Christmas Eve every year. So the way it would work when I was a kid was every year Christmas Eve would be pretty relaxed for most of the day. But then around 5, 6 o'clock, we would go pick up my great grandma who lived near us.
Mm-hmm.
And, the party that we would go to was kind of everyone. She was the matriarch of the party. So it was everyone from her on down. So
not just
first cousins, first aunts and uncles, but second cousins as well. So we'd usually have 40 some people.
Wow. That's incredible. And that's only one side of the family. So,
yeah. So, you know, everyone just kind of kept in touch. I mean, usually, you know, second cousins, it just gets too big and people kind of split off and form their own things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we would have second cousins and my great grandma passed away, I think in 2007, 2008, but it's been still going strong since then. But yeah, we would go over there around 5, 6 o'clock. We are from Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
We would go to my grandma, her brother's house and his wife. So my mom's aunt and uncle. And it was always snowing and cold and windy, northern Ohio weather. And we would brave the winter to get out there. And my uncle would usually have his snow blower to try and clear out the driveway for people to have somewhere to park.
Uh-huh.
And we'd get there, we'd haul, you know, we'd a lot of times we'd pick up my grandma too, and she'd have some kind of food, a lot of presents that she was bringing. So we'd all help all the grandmas load all their stuff into the house. And we'd get in, and everyone would be socializing. And the food, the appetizers would be all laid out there, you know, lots of cheese, crackers, olives. We love olives. Southern Italian, Italian-Americans eat a ton of olives, hot peppers, you know, stuff like that. Pizza, a lot of times, was an appetizer.
As an appetizer, I see.
Yeah.
And it was all like set out on a table, like everybody will help themselves?
Yeah, very, very much everything buffet style.
Buffet style, okay.
Which seems to be very, very American. In Italy, that doesn't seem to be done, at least any time I was ever in Italy.
I think everybody sits down and then the hosts bring out the food and et cetera, I see. So, and what was the main dish that would be served?
Yes. So after we're there for about, you know, an hour or two, if you hear about Italian-American Christmas, something you're always going to come across if you talk to people or if you try to do some research, you're always going to hear of something called the Feast of the Seven Fishes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which I didn't know about when I came to Canada. I heard it first here in Canada. So I think it's an Italian-American tradition, not an Italian one. I could be wrong, but...
Yeah, I was actually speaking to a friend about this a couple of days ago, and we started to do some research. There's some stuff out there on Wikipedia. Normally, I'm a pretty okay to use Wikipedia, but
I think the
problem with something like this is that it's probably just one person put on that what their family did. So I think some more research might be in order. Maybe one day soon I'll try to... could let you know what I find, but what they said on Wikipedia was that there was a Calabria down there. I think it was Calabria. There was something called La Vigilia, the vigil, that was similar to the Feast of the Seven Fishes. It was done on Christmas Eve. But they would do fish down there. So the title, The Feast of the Seven Fishes, makes it sound a lot more formal than it really is. From my family's observation, obviously everyone's family does it differently, but from also most people that I've spoken to about it, it's more, we have a number of fish dishes on Christmas Eve and we don't eat meat. That's more what it is. And I don't know how it got this very formal sounding name, where it sounds almost like a ritual, which it's just eating fish, really. There was a couple staples, the main one being bacala,
which is cod, I think, in English.
Salted cod, layered in a pan and baked. Calamari. My American pronunciation is coming.
Which is squid. Was it fried or grilled?
Fried a lot of times. Spaghetti with clam sauce, I remember. Shrimp cocktail, which, you know, definitely American thing with the cocktail sauce, cold shrimp. We would always have that. But yeah, so the Feast of the Seven Fishes. So the problem is, and I was just talking to my grandma about this the other day, but you've got a lot of picky eaters, especially in the younger generations. So sometimes they don't want to eat the fish. So I don't know if my elders should have been tougher and just forced, the kids to either eat the fish or don't eat anything. But there's been other foods available. I guess always a lot of pizza around, and probably a lot of the kids eat a ton of pizza. And I was, I was not super picky, but I've really become in the past 10 years that I'll try anything. And I really wasn't like that growing up.
Of course, so, nobody is like that. I remember I didn't like soup at all. And now soup is one of my favorite things. But you would not have meat. Pizza, okay. But would you have like pepperoni pizza or something like that?
It probably, yeah.
Okay, they were bending the rule.
Those rules were, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's okay. it's a little bit diluted anymore. So, dessert-wise, I never knew what panettone, pandoro, and mascarpone, never heard of those still.
No?
Much, much later in life. We would eat tons of cookies. My grandma would always make the cookies. Tons of cookies of different varieties. Probably the biggest Italian ones. Well, they're probably all Italian recipes way back, but the most distinct ones were the pizzelle. Do you know what a pizzelle is?
No, I don't.
I did look it up just a little bit ago. Yeah, it's Abruzzese, but it's and as you know, my family is technically Molise, Molisani, which is very similar.
Yeah, bordering to Abruzzo.
The pizzelle is almost made in like a waffle iron type thing. It's a pizzelle iron.
Ah, okay,
we call them pizzelles. And it's a very thin kind of wafery thing that you take the batter and you kind of like a waffle iron. And those were always everywhere, at not just Christmas, any kind of family gathering.
Oh, interesting.
I'd be interested to know if any of our listeners eat those or how specific they are to kind of our region, our historical region, or I'd be interested.
Yeah, absolutely. If anybody knows.
Another thing we would do is, and probably a lot of people know this one, is S cookies.
Oh.
And I don't know the name of it other than S cookie.
I see them in stores. Some Italian, pseudo-Italian brands make those. But I wasn't familiar with them in Italy either. Yeah.
I didn't see one in Italy. This is my other side of the family. My father's mother would always make them. That's the Sicilian side. And I never really saw a lot of S cookies. I never saw an S cookie in Italy. And I tell you what, as soon as I got to, I got to the town where her father was from, and what do you know? They put one right in front of me. I said,
okay, so this explains it all.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. This is where they come from.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Okay, so no panettone, no pandoro, nothing like that.
No. I think I'm going to pick one up this year. I don't know that. So you recommend panettone? Is it like a little kind of? It's kind of like a rivalry between the two.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you're either a panettone person or a pandoro person. It's unlikely that you like both. Strangely enough. So yeah, there's a rivalry. Okay, so I'm gonna tell you why I prefer panettone. Panettone is a kind of bread. So it's a sweet bread with raisins and orange candied peel, traditionally. But now you can find variations with a lot of other things in it. But I recommend the traditional, of course. You know that from me. I always prefer traditional. And because it's bread, it's stringy. It's got, you know, this very long gluten strands. And I like bread. So I like any kind of bread, including sweet bread, of course. Pandoro instead is more of a cake. It's more of a, you know, a fluffy,
yeah, like a yellow.
Yes, there's eggs in it, and it has the texture of a sponge cake. You know, it's probably a little bit thicker and denser than a sponge cake, and it tastes like vanilla. And there's, you know, powdered sugar on top. It can be amazing as well, but I wouldn't want to eat too much of it. Instead, panettone, I can eat the whole thing if you let me. So. It's really,
okay,
especially with the mascarpone cream, which I recommend. If you have never had it, you have to treat yourself, Nick. There's the recipe on my blog. Of course, I'm going to advertise myself. Try that. It's just the most amazing thing ever, together with panettone.
Okay. I'm going to, but you guys just buy
the panettone
or the pandoro, correct?
Yes, most people just buy it because it's very hard
These
to make.
Boxed cardboard box.
Yes.
They're always like stacked up in a pyramid in the store.
That's right. Yeah, because especially, well, they're both hard to make. I know people who make them. I have a friend, blogger Christina, who makes her own. I'm sure other bloggers do as well. But, you know, I've never ventured myself into doing something like that. So you can buy some amazing ones, and they're very fresh because they only really show up in stores around Christmas time, and then they disappeared. Instead, you know, in Vancouver, when I go to Italian stores, I always laugh because panettone sometimes is still kicking around in April, which is Easter. You know, you would never see them around Easter time. You see the colomba at Easter time, which is the Easter cake, but you'd never see panettone there. And because they're not expired yet, you know, they still sell them. But yeah, that's really strange.
Well, I'm going to the Italian store I've been going to has the big stacks of both. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely going to pick. I don't know. Maybe I should just pick up both of them.
You should probably do that. Absolutely. Try them and you'll decide which side you're on. Yeah.
And then, but only one time I can do both. And then after that, one or the other.
I think so. You'll see. You won't have to. It's not a rule. You will find that you will naturally gravitate towards one or the other. And then next year, you won't bother about the other one.
I see. Maybe I'll start introducing panettone pandoro into the mix. I'll bring it this year. And we'll see how everybody likes it.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. I find that panettone is becoming popular in North America. So I think it's a bit of an acquired taste, but it's sticking on. So yeah, let me know what you think. Yeah, looking forward to hearing that.
I will definitely do that. And I will do the mascarpone as well.
Awesome. Yeah, you try the whole thing, the full experience. Okay, so we got to Christmas Day. There will be then, I suppose, another meal for you and your other side of the family. Is that right?
Yes. So Christmas Day, we would always go to my dad's side of the family, which was just lower key. He actually got four older brothers. It's not a small family, but some of them live out of state and in different places. So it ended up being a smaller gathering. And my grandma, who's no longer with us, would cook. And it was always small enough where actually we would just sit on the table and have dinner and, you know, we would help her, but serve to the table as opposed to a buffet where kind of the food is just kind of out there. You know, even on the Christmas Eve party, it's kind of like, there's no even set dinner time really. It's just kind of the food's there, have at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Christmas Day would be a lot more lower key, and we'd have a meal. We'd go to my grandma's, and you know, she would usually do pretty traditional Italian structure, even although we wouldn't necessarily always do primo, secondo, contorno, etc., all in that order. She would always have them all in hindsight. Okay.
But not necessarily in order.
No. People here are just used to eating everything on the same plate. So you don't really see that very often.
I see. That would be strange for me. Yeah, absolutely. There would certainly be some structure in the Christmas meal, just like every other meal.
I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
I really enjoy the Italian structure of it all. Now when I'm cooking for people, I serve it to them that way. Not only is it good, I just enjoy the kind of like ceremonial aspect of it. Like you're parading out all this food one after the other. I just really like it.
Yeah. You kind of look forward to the next thing.
Exactly.
There's some time between the dishes as well, which is sort of necessary when you're eating a lot. And then you do eat a lot in those events for sure. You know, for us, it would be appetizers first. So cold cuts for sure would be there. Not much for cheese, which is a little bit heavy at the beginning of a meal. Then it would be insalata di mare, which is a sea salad, which is basically octopus and shrimp, maybe squid, boiled and then made into a salad with, you know, lemon, olive oil, and parsley. Then there would be things like
polpo, patate. I love that.
Yeah, that too. Not really in my family, but that's another common one. We have octopus and potato together in a cold salad. Then there would be things like insalata russa, which is funny. It's a Russian salad. I don't know if you're familiar with that one.
I am very familiar with that one. Oh, okay. My Piedmontese people love that
stuff.
Loved
it. Yeah. So that's mayonnaise, which my mother would make from scratch. And inside, for those who don't know, there's basically cooked vegetables like peas and diced carrots and some pickled vegetables as well, I think. So this is, you know, creamy appetizer. It can also be a side. So that would be the appetizers. And then for the meal, there would be usually a baked pasta. So like a lasagna or cannelloni or maybe a pasticcio, which is like another, you can make baked pasta with other shapes into a casserole. And then after the pasta dish, there would be a second course or a combination of second courses, like roast beef, which is funny because in Italy, at least in Northern Italy, we call it roast beef with Italian accent, and is our version of a very thin sliced, barely cooked beef. Do you know anything about that?
Very, very thinly sliced, very, very lightly cooked.
Yes.
I think I've had it. I think I've had it. But as an antipasto, though, as an antipasto, I think I've had it.
It could be as an antipasto as well, yes. Another thing that we would make for this type of events is vitello tonnato, which is tuna de veal. It's a very strange mix of fish and meat that I think comes from France, which is tonnet sauce, which is tuna and broth and mayonnaise, which covers this thin-sliced veal. And there will be capers with it as well. So that's another strange, if you want. Now it sounds strange to me. It was very, of course, not strange when I was there. And so that would be another thing that would be served. Sometimes it's an appetizer, but it could also be a second course. That was that. And then there would be usually dried fruit and fresh fruit. And that will probably it at that point because, you know, there was really no room for dessert. Also because we would have panettone then later in the afternoon. That was the normal structure for us. Yeah. So instead you said everything probably on the same plate for you, but served at the table. And this was your Christmas meal, right?
Christmas day, yeah. And probably 1-2 o'clock in the afternoon, typically.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Also, you probably were busy because you had a late night the day before.
Exactly.
And then when you woke up, you had to open your presents. So the whole morning kind of stretches into a late lunch. I see. Awesome.
Exactly. And my father's family is kind of the yin to my mother's family's yang because my mom's family is staying up till 2 a.m. and being loud. And my father's family is a little more calm. A little more, okay, it's 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, let's go home. So the next day, we'd usually get back pretty early and catch up on our sleep. And then we would usually meet then with the other side of my mom's family, either the Saturday after Christmas or in recent years, we've been doing it on New Year's Eve. And that party is quite similar to the It's similar to the first one, but not quite as extravagant. We really wouldn't do the fish with them. Well, because it wasn't Christmas Eve, obviously. But yeah, just another get-together. Always lots of get-togethers. So in Italy, is it kept more small, these get-togethers? I mean, do people get together with more distant cousins and aunts and uncles all in the same house at one time? Or is that not as...
Well, frankly, I mean, I can only speak for myself and for my friends. It's not as big as the one that you're describing, but it could be that that's only my side that's like that. But
yeah, everybody's family's different too.
Of course, I mean, yeah.
Everyone's doing different things. A lot of big gatherings we do.
Yeah, and then for us, there was the leftovers party. Like, this is always, it was always the case. So it would be small and just our family, but the night, so Christmas Day's evening, we would have probably just, you know, be just ourselves, a lighter meal. There was often a broth, ravioli in broth would be very common for that event, and then there would be leftovers, so still something from the day, from the big meal, and that would continue also the next few days, really, sometimes. Nick, obviously we're out of time for this episode. It was fantastic to hear about your story. As usual, you can picture a very detailed image of what it was like. I totally can see it. I'm sure the people listening could as well. So again, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays to you, to your family. Again, it's wonderful to be able to have these episodes together, and for me to learn a lot more of Italian Americans in general, which is very, very fascinating.
Well, thanks for having me, Paolo. It was a pleasure. You got me in the Christmas spirit here.
Again, Happy Holidays. Talk soon.
Okay. Ciao.
Ciao, Nick.